This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Disaster turns everyday rules upside down. We've got rent, we've got bonds, repairs, insurance, there's donations. Suddenly, none of it feels clear and decisions have to be made fast. Well, with bushfires impacting communities right across Victoria, we're checking in on what protections are in place, what steps matter most, and how to avoid costly mistakes. We're joined by Nicole Rich, Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria. Good to chat with you again, Nicole.
Yeah, good afternoon, Warren.
When a rental home is badly damaged or completely destroyed by a disaster, what rights do renters actually have in that moment?
Yes, it's a terrible situation, one we all hope not to be in, but unfortunately we know the fires have had a really large footprint this summer, so yeah, it's quite possible, I think, that there'll be some renters in this position. So I think, you know, often people know with renting in Victoria, there's kind of a process. You might sign an agreement. If you want to end the agreement, you would give notice, and you have to give a bit of time with your notice to vacate before you can leave. But in a situation where the property is actually being damaged or destroyed, there are some specific rules that can apply in that situation. So in particular, you know, if the property is basically completely destroyed, or it's just not safe or fit to live in anymore, then either the renter or the landlord can actually end the agreement immediately. They can issue an immediate notice to vacate, which is quite important for both parties, and also particularly for the renter in terms of, you know, whether they should really still be on the hook for paying rent and things if the property is not there anymore and they can't live in it.
What if that notice to vacate isn't issued and the place you're renting is no longer safe or livable? Do you still have to keep paying rent?
Great question. So, look, if the rental property's, you know, not there, it's been destroyed, I mean, essentially you should let the rental provider or your real estate agent know straight away that that's happened, and you really shouldn't be paying rent from that point on. So, ideally we would suggest you should give a notice to vacate so that it's really clear that the rental agreement is over. But I think more generally we would say you'd stop paying rent at that point anyway. So you should tell people that you're ending the agreement or the property's destroyed, you can't live in the property. But then I think you'd be cancelling your rent payments from that point on.
After a disaster, Nicole, is the rental provider expected to help renters find somewhere else to live, or is that not their responsibility?
Yeah, legally speaking, it's not. So, like is the case usually, even if you have a good relationship with your rental provider or your property manager, they don't have any legal obligation to help you find a new place if the rental agreement is coming to an end. So that doesn't change even after something like a disaster. We know that, you know, in a lot of occasions, especially in this sort of a situation where you've got a really tight-knit community, you might find that the landlord or the agent is going to go out of their way to help their renters try and find somewhere else, but there isn't actually an obligation to do that. So if anyone is sort of really struggling, they've been displaced due to a disaster, then there are some options that they can contact. We'd definitely suggest people call their local council or visit the local relief or recovery centre that would be set up in your local community. They'll often be able to refer you to some short-term housing options, because we know that can be an issue.
We're chatting with Nicole Rich, the Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria. Nicole, let's say a rental has been destroyed by a disaster such as the recent fires. How do renters go about getting their bond back, and how quickly should that happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, the bond process, again, you know, that is the same. So as soon as the rental agreement is over, essentially it should really trigger that bond process. So if the rental property is being destroyed, you know, or it's just unlivable and the rental agreement has ended, then really the bond claim process should start and the bond should be returned to the renters. If the property, say, Warren, the property hasn't been completely destroyed, maybe there's been a bit of damage, but it hasn't been destroyed, then the usual, you know, the rental agreement is not necessarily over yet. So it would really depend on whether you're ending the rental agreement. And then if so, the usual process applies. If the property is livable, it's just got a bit of damage, then it's not necessarily the case that you can just end the agreement. Instead, we probably recommend that you report the damage and the repairs that are needed to your rental provider or your agent as soon as possible. But if the rental agreement is set to end, then you should be putting in the bond claim.
What happens when it comes to, say, the repairs or even the cleaning up after a disaster? How is responsibility split between, say, the renter and the rental provider?
Yeah, this can be a bit of a misconception sometimes, but obviously there can be a lot of damage or and the need to, you know, clear debris or, you know, clear things, obviously do some cleaning if there's been a fire. Certainly we see this after things like floods as well. I mean, the obligation on the landlord or the rental provider to maintain the property is still the same. So, you know, it will fall to, you know, if you're a property owner and you're renting out the property, it will fall to you to make sure that the repairs and the cleanup gets done. So a renter, the person that's living there, is only really responsible for the cleaning that arises from their use of the property. So if it's damage caused by a disaster, you know, it is going to be the rental provider's responsibility. And then obviously some repairs might be more urgent than others. So anything that, you know, would be classed an urgent repair, the same process applies where the renter should tell their agent or their rental provider that these things need a repair and that it's urgent and that they need to be done. And then the same obligation applies that a rental provider or the agent needs to attend to those repairs immediately. But look, in saying that, I also just want to give that the practical kind of guidance that if you're talking about a disaster situation where there might have been a number of properties affected, it's, you know, a really difficult time for the community, can be tough to get trades in and things as well, the obligation is still there to action the repairs immediately and try and get onto them. But I'd probably just urge that everybody be a little bit patient because we just know that it can take a little while, right, to get repairs done after a disaster. There's a lot of things going on. So we just kind of would recommend that everybody act as quickly as they can, but also try and understand that, you know, it's a difficult time.
Nicole, let's say we're in a property, we love living there, we love the location, it's great, we've, you know, we're part of the community, we're quite established, but the rental provider needs to rebuild the property after the damage. What does that mean for the renter? Can the agreement continue or does it still have to end?
Oh, that's a great question, Warren. So, yeah, if they need to rebuild, it can really depend on the nature of the rebuild or the repairs. So if it's repairs that can be done, you know, with somebody still living there, it's still safe and fit to live in. It's just that you need to do the repairs around someone. Then I guess the usual process applies, right? That you'd work with your renter around times for the trades to attend, and you'd give that kind of notice and pick suitable times, and you'd work around them and make those kind of arrangements. But if it's the case that you need the property needs to be vacant for either the property to be rebuilt or for the repairs to take place, then that is grounds to end the rental agreement, to give the notice to vacate, because it's just not safe for people to live in there. So that would be grounds to do that. And I mean, I think, you know, it's such a sad situation when that happens. Like you say, you can be really connected into your community, you don't want to leave, but if the property really needs those repairs and it's not going to be suitable or safe otherwise, then that does need to happen.
Sadly, and I'm kind of embarrassed that we even have to ask this question, but we do see scams pop up after disasters. What should rental providers be particularly alert to during this time? I can't actually believe that people would even do that, but it does happen, doesn't it?
Look, it's one of the first things that we do when we know there's been a disaster event is we get scam warnings out, which is, like you say, it's so disappointing. But we just know from experience that there's always somebody out there that wants to take advantage of people's goodwill and wanting to help others at these kind of times. So I would say the common scams that we unfortunately see after disasters, there's sort of two key types. So the first is kind of donation scams, which we can talk about, but the other one, which I guess is particularly relevant for properties, is fake tradies. So we do see this phenomenon where people will come into the areas They'll kind of turn up at properties that clearly need some kind of work done, and they'll come up with stories like, you know, I was down the road helping somebody else, and I've got a bit of time and I've got some spare materials and I can see you need help. So, you know, if you want, I can offer you this today only deal and I can do some work for you and it'll be a lot cheaper. That kind of thing. So they'll offer these cheap cash only repairs. So what they'll do is they'll take your cash, they'll often take a big payment up front, and then they'll either just never turn up again, or they'll do a little bit of work, it'll be pretty shoddy, and then again that you won't be able to contact them again. So I know that often, like I mentioned, that it can be a big wait for tradies and people need a bit of patience, and sometimes it gets really frustrating. But I just urge anybody that's listening who knows anybody affected by this, please encourage people not to fall for this kind of trap. Wait for your legitimate tradies. It's the same kind of process I would recommend generally. Ask people for recommendations. Actually check the tradies' credentials and references. If they need a license or a registration, that they've actually done that. Get some quotes. No legit tradie will take the full payment from you up front. They'll always give you a quote for free, that you don't have to pay for a quote. They might take a deposit once you accept the quote. They won't take the full amount up front. So anybody that's sort of saying, well, I'm not going to give you a quote, I want to take all the payment now before I start any work, they're just like red flags. Please do not engage those people. Do not hand your money over.
Now, what about if your car has been damaged during a disaster? We saw those sad photos of those cars floating down on the Great Ocean Road. What are the first practical steps that people should take if a car is damaged?
Yeah, that was terrible, wasn't it? I mean, I just really feel for people just caught up in that sort of flash flood event, and now they're going to be dealing with this issue. So obviously, if you've got insurance, that is absolutely the first step. You should contact your insurer straight away, check your policy, check what you're insured for, make the claim. And then, you know, there might be some things you need to deal with in terms of whether you've got to pay an excess, or you might even have a dispute about what the value is of the car and things. But regardless of that, the most important thing is make the claim so that you can get that process started. More generally, you know, if it's something where it's a repairable issue, that might not be the case for some of those cars, unfortunately, we saw on the news. But if you're looking at repairing a vehicle, I would say the same kind of recommendations that I made around tradies. Please ask friends and family for recommendations around a reputable mechanic. Check their credentials, get a few quotes. You know, all legit mechanics, they're not going to make you pay all the money up front. They'll give you a quote, they'll take the car, and you'll generally pay once you've agreed to the works, and then they do the works. So, you know, don't be spending a lot of money up front. Mechanics that, you know what they're doing and doing a good job will give you the quote, and then you'll pay at the end.
And of course, Nicole, many of us who aren't impacted by the disaster itself want to help out by donating to disaster appeals or even fundraisers. What should we check to make sure that our money is going where it should go and not to some scam?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mentioned that's the other kind of scam. Like, again, it's just so disappointing. But, you know, people have this, they really want to help and they're looking to volunteer or to donate. And then people set up these kind of scam donation sort of fundraisers and can take advantage of people's goodwill. So we absolutely want to support people to donate, but to donate kind of where they want their money to go. So we would just say, you know, be really careful about anybody that's approaching you to donate. If you haven't asked for that approach, just be really careful. If you've never heard of the charity, you can check that they're actually registered with the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission, or you can look on our website at Consumer Affairs Victoria to see if they're actually registered as a fundraiser. The Victorian government has actually established now an official Victorian bushfires appeal 2026. So I would say that's obviously like a really good option, and a legitimate option to donate to. So if you're not sure and you want to help, that is a great option. Obviously there might be some local fundraisers that are totally, valid and really, really worthwhile in local communities. But again, just do your homework and be really careful before you, hand over your money.
Nicole, always good to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Warren.
Thank you. That's Nicole Rich, the Director of Consumer Affairs Victoria. If you want to learn more, visit the Consumer Affairs Victoria website, consumer.vic.gov. joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.